This is a Career Channel program from UC San Diego Extension. Visit us at www.uctv.tv/careers for videos, employment news, and trend articles to help recent college graduates and grads in career transition bridge to better employment.
Good morning. This is The Pulse, Issues in Healthcare, the online interactive radio show where healthcare leaders share their thoughts with our listeners who can then pose questions of their own. This is Leslie Bruce, your host and the Director of Healthcare Leadership and Community Outreach for UC San Diego Extension. This is our 29th show, and we've had more than 2 years of shows in the interactive format, enjoying questions from listeners for our guest as we broadcast live. However, we're making a change. I wanted you all to be aware. In order to expand our ability to talk to other interesting healthcare leaders who cannot make this particular time slot and be here live and in person on the second Thursday, we're going to be changing up the show a bit starting next month. So starting in March, we'll no longer broadcast live. We will still do great interviews every month, but they'll be available by podcast solely. Of course, they're available by podcast now, and that's where we get a lot of you who listen to the show. But next month, we're going to go to podcast only. So just want to let you know about that. We certainly will be attracting more leaders that we all want to hear from, particularly those from out of town. So live listeners, though, I want you to take heart, because when the names of the guests are posted, you can always send me an email or a message through LinkedIn with questions you'd like me to ask. So for today's show, listeners, I'm still counting on you, so don't go away. I'm counting on you to help us get at the information you're looking for by typing your questions in the live text chat feature. Say that 5 times fast. You can do it anytime during the conversation. We'll get to your questions just a little bit later. So let me, without further ado, get to our guest. Joining us today is Dimitrios Alexiou, the new CEO of the Hospital Association of San Diego and Imperial Counties. Welcome, Dimitrios.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Steve Escoboza, your predecessor, was a guest on the show really, really early in our run, and I'm delighted to have you come and update us on the challenges facing hospitals, because a lot has happened in 2 years. So let's start having you introduce yourself. Tell us about how you came to this position to be our new CEO.
Thank you for having me again. In terms of how I got here, that's a great question. Most recently, I was a regional vice president with the Hospital Association of Southern California, which is funny to say because San Diego is part of Southern California, and yet different association. But, you know, that was a great experience. I think it gave me a lot of skills that go into the world that is association work, especially as an association representing hospitals. Prior to that, I was a chief operating officer for a pediatric facility up in Loma Linda, which focused on pediatric subacute as well as an intermediate care facility, day health. And we were working at the time on opening up a pediatric rehab hospital as well. So I feel like overall probably have a pretty good balance. Also, probably not the traditional route that folks go, because I've sort of been on both sides of the fence.
Well, you know, that's a great thing that I think we've had many guests point out, is that variability in their perspectives is valuable. So to tell us, we are an educational institution, and I know that you have an educational path you went through as well that I think might be of interest to our listeners.
So in terms of my education, I have a bachelor's from the University of Arizona out in Tucson in general biology, and then my master's is from Cal State Northridge in health administration. In addition, I am a fellow in the American College of Healthcare Executives, and I'm also a CORO fellow. CORO had at the time a health leadership track where they were looking to get skills and train future healthcare leaders, and they're primarily now focused on the public policy side. So a lot of your famous electives might be CORO fellows. I think Alex Padilla is a CORO fellow, as well as some others.
Great. Well, those are all wonderful. You know, you've got your bachelor's, your master's, and then the continuing education, and certainly that's important. This is obviously, we'll get right to the heart of it here, a very tumultuous time in healthcare. It is for everyone and for every major stakeholder group, and hospitals are certainly no exception. outline for us, if you would, a couple of the biggest challenges that are facing hospitals today.
Well, ultimately, I think the first place you always start is follow the money. We're working in an era where the size of the overall pie in terms of dollars and healthcare spending is an area that at the federal level and even at the state level has continued to be a challenge. So in essence, hospitals are having to figure out a way to essentially do more with less. We've seen through the ACA a lot of the ways that that's being paid for is future cuts to Medicare spending, for example. So you're working in the same environment, yet, you know, reimbursement-wise, you continue to be challenged. Then when you get to the state level, Medi-Cal is another challenge. We've recently, through the ACA and through expanded Medi-Cal, added a lot of people to the insured ranks. At the same time, California is one of the worst states in terms of Medi-Cal reimbursement. So it's sort of a challenge in that you're adding people to the rolls, and yet the reimbursement for caring for those people has continued to shrink. So there's some definite challenges there. Then the other challenge, obviously, is figuring out how to get to where you need to be moving forward. You know, you always hear the expression heads in beds or volume, and we're definitely shifting away from that. At the present time, though, you know, we're still primarily fee-for-service, but that will change over time. So it's a matter of positioning yourself. So, you know, between figuring out how to exist with less and how to get to a different place, you know, those are two significant challenges that hospitals all over the state are dealing with.
I remember Dwayne Donner, who's the head of the California Hospital Association, exhorting to a giant crowd of executives like you and like your members and saying, we must change. And trying to do that in this environment where so many things are changing at the same time, you know, that, that coping is difficult, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you know, again, it is a challenge because essentially when it comes down to it, even as you look at all the models, of whether you're talking about population health or whatever you're talking about, a hospital's role in all that still primarily is the acute care episodes. You know, it's caring for the folks when they're in the hospital. But we've been challenged to deal with some of that in other fashions. For example, looking at readmission penalties, penalizing hospitals for individuals who come back within 30 days. So hospitals have had to adapt to figure out ways on how to care for individuals and follow up with them after they leave that acute care scene, that setting, and ensuring that they're getting the care they need within the community. So it really is a partnership. Even though hospitals historically have been sort of that be-all, end-all, as you get to a larger model, realistically, hospitals still manage that acute care episode, but you have to work with partners in the community to do all the other things that you're looking to do. You know, one of the interesting pieces that you always hear is how much money we spend on healthcare. This is just something that has interested me. And yet, you know, when you compare us to countries throughout the world, everybody always criticizes the United States, in essence, saying how much we spend on healthcare and do we get value for our dollars spent. One of the interesting things that I've seen is even though we spend a lot on the medical side, where we don't spend a lot as a country is on the social services. So you have countries like France where they're spending 25% of their GDP going towards social services. Ours is maybe 9%. So you see some differences because a lot of what we're talking about with healthcare as we move forward is caring for not just their health needs, but also their social needs.
Right, right. And that is a part of the big change we're going through. I think you're absolutely right. And the numbers about healthcare spending really are paint an incomplete picture. We really have to look at the social services because we can't expect someone to, you know, be healthy, follow their regimen, or take their medications if they have no home. You know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, and that's, you know, a particular challenge because obviously representing hospitals, you know, it shouldn't necessarily be the hospital's place to care for that. We should have a piece in that.
Sure, sure.
But, you know, when it comes to the homeless or when it comes to, you know, medical homes, when it comes to housing, you know, those are areas where we definitely have a piece of that pie, but we shouldn't be expected to carry the burden. Yeah, exactly. And nor do we want to own that.
I totally understand. I just think it's interesting when we talk about healthcare spending that we really need to look at those social service numbers, you know, when, especially as we compare ourselves to other countries where their healthcare spending is so much lower. I think that's a very important point to make. So with hospitals having been at the heart of our healthcare system in the past and focused on getting people well rather than keeping them well, what other things are hospitals going to be doing? You know, you mentioned the partnership with community partners when patients get out so that they don't come back, you know, mm-hmm. that they do in fact recover. What are the other kinds of things that you see happening in population health and that kind of thing?
Well, it's definitely more of an investment in all the downstream business, what you would probably classify as the post-acute care arena. Hospitals have a variety of sort of feet in the water when it comes to that. So it's providing, you know, their skilled nursing needs, their home health needs, et cetera. You know, I saw a stat where it's something like $3 out of every $4 goes towards chronic conditions. And part of that's being driven, obviously, by the fact that you have about 10,000 people a day turning Medicare age. On the whole, we're living longer. Mm-hmm. And as we live longer, you tend to develop chronic conditions and a lot of comorbidities. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a significant challenge to continue to meet the needs of folks in terms of staying in the community. So a lot of it will be, you know, looking at all those post-acute care arenas and developing programs and services that will meet their needs to essentially care for them so they don't have to keep going back to the hospital for things that could be done within the community.
And you're right. And I think the other challenge that I'm hearing about in the community is which setting to put these mm-hmm. patients in, because there are a variety and you want to put them in the one that is most effective for them and yet most cost effective for the system.
And that's, you know, a challenge for hospitals mm-hmm. because as you're wanting to discharge individuals, you have to have that setting has to exist. And if it doesn't, essentially, they're sort of stuck in the hospitals, and that's where it's a challenge for hospitals because you're eating the cost of keeping them there. Because ultimately, when it comes to insurance, they're not going to necessarily continue to pay for a hospitalization that they view isn't necessary.
Right.
And yet, if the service in our community doesn't exist, that's a challenge.
Are there services in our community that don't exist?
There's always challenges. For mm-hmm. example, you know, one, and we were talking about this the other day, is take somebody who may not need an inpatient hospital stay, but they may need skilled nursing.
Mm-hmm.
Skilled nursing facilities, for the most part, operate at pretty close to capacity. And then if you add in somebody who needs skilled nursing who has maybe some behavioral issues, that becomes a bigger challenge because there's even less facilities mm-hmm. who are willing to take somebody who needs skilled nursing with behavioral challenges as well. So, you know, those are problems mm-hmm. to find those levels of care.
You know, I was going to ask you, are there any issues that, you know, face hospitals that are particular to San Diego? I think you've just hit on one there about having the right kinds of mm-hmm. post-acute care facilities available, ones with behavioral health. Mm-hmm. Are there any other uniquely San Diego issues?
You know, I don't know that there's necessarily uniquely San Diego. It's more of a statewide issue. I mean,
okay.
Take behavioral health in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's also a growing challenge with parity. In behavioral health, it's a matter of having access to those services. And where that becomes really impactful is if they don't have services, then their primary place for getting care would be the emergency department,
mm-hmm.
which isn't necessarily the best place for somebody who has some behavioral health issues to be.
Right.
In addition, it ties up hospital resources to care for those individuals while they might be on a 5150 hold, for example, so they're there for 3+ days. And that just overall isn't the best place for them to be receiving care. So it's a matter of having access to the right services at the right time.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really our challenge, isn't mm-hmm. it, to make sure that that's doable. One of the things that we hear about, read about all the time now, and I think it's beginning to kind of permeate even the general public, is this value-based purchasing. It's funny, I met with a woman who is relatively new to the healthcare industry, and she heard that phrase and she said, isn't all purchasing value-based? And so this is really a term of art, and I think it represents a sea change in healthcare. I wondered if you could describe briefly for our listeners what it is and why it's such a sea change.
Well, you know, again, it's getting back to what we talked about, getting away from just pure volume, just people getting care and getting paid on a fee for service. It, you know, starts to look at the quality of care that's being provided and measures folks
value.
Yeah, on those metrics. So that also becomes a challenge because ultimately, in any case, there's winners and losers, so to speak, in that you may be providing value, but there's always going to be somebody in a bottom quartile, which even if you're providing good quality care, you'd be the one, if you're at the bottom of that list, who potentially is penalized based on the care you're providing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some challenges there as well. I know recently the feds are talking about speeding up moving away from fee-for-service, moving more into value-based care. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of those things that you have to take with caution in that we need to adapt as a system, but we need to do it at the right pace where you're not harming the very facilities who need to continue to provide care in our communities.
You know, that brings me to another question I was thinking about is, are all these changes beneficial to patients? I mean, the way I see it, we are all patients, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, sooner or later. And so are we going in the right direction, do you think? Are these changes going to help hospitals provide better care?
Ultimately, yes, and we're seeing it. I know we do a lot of quality work. Mm-hmm. For example, we have a quality person who works with all our hospitals, and there's a statewide effort. So, for example, one of the areas that there's been a lot of focus is on reducing early elective deliveries, which we know is
so we're talking quality. About C-sections for women or inductions.
Yeah,
induction women who
where we're doing it prior to 39 weeks, because obviously what we've seen is the statistics are in when they're delivered early, chances are those babies can develop some respiratory issues and other problems, which your health system would have to deal with. So in essence, yeah, we are moving in the right direction. There is more of a focus on quality efforts, providing better care, looking at technology. Obviously, telemedicine is another growing area. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of opportunities to provide care in a place, in a setting, which works for the patient. Mm. Now, the challenge is how do we get there in the short term? Because the problem you run into is people have developed habits for an eternity, and you can't just flip a switch and all of a sudden say, look, go get primary care. Go to your doctor. Don't go to the emergency department.
Mm-hmm. It's what cultural we're change.
Yeah, right? And it's going to take time. Mm-hmm. We're already seeing that in that it's pretty simple concept-wise, but when you give somebody an insurance card, they're going to use it. And if you don't have enough primary care physicians, if you don't have enough clinics, if you don't have enough places where they can receive care, or they're just used to going to emergency departments, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing increased utilization mm-hmm. when it comes to our emergency departments. That mm-hmm. creates some challenges. Wow. So it's a matter of linking them up. But yeah. there are opportunities as well. We have our 1115 waivers coming up for renewal.
Tell listeners what that is.
So the 1115 waiver, it's a three-year waiver. Our most recent one was the Bridge to Reform, which created like our LIP, our low-income health program, which gave Medi-Cal individuals early access through increased eligibility to get coverage. And so there's different things you can put within a waiver. It has to be cost neutral, but it allows you flexibility from the federal level to do different things in a cost-neutral fashion. So as we look at our next waiver, we're talking about all sorts of things, whether it's the whole person trying to provide care and meet the needs of the whole person. There's other things within the waiver we're looking at, obviously related to workforce. Maybe there's a way through the waiver to get increased residency slots so we can get more physicians in mm-hmm. our community, which is definitely needed as well. So there's all sorts of ideas, and that is being worked on currently as we speak. The state is looking at all sorts of ideas. San Diego obviously is advocating for certain things, as are other communities. So that one is coming. You'll see some action on that in the coming months. But there's a tremendous opportunity there, which allows us to move forward and take advantage of some of our changes and better position ourselves to provide care within our communities.
Well, you touched on a number of things that I wanted to ask you about. I think that's great. That's great. You know, workforce issues. Uh-huh. You know, sometimes we hear from guests that there are enormous amount of job opportunities available, but they can't fill them because the proper skill sets mm-hmm. do not exist in that community. What are you finding? Are hospitals able to hire the talent they need, or are there shortages? And if so, what are those and what's being done?
There are definitely some shortages. I mean, historically, we've always talked about the nursing shortages, that we don't have enough nurses. And some of that was slowed down, I would say, by when we moved forward with our recent economy where we were struggling for a while. You probably had a lot of individuals who weren't retiring because they were still trying to hang on a little bit longer. So now that as the economy's picked up, I think you'll start to hear more in that area.
Okay.
We do have an aging workforce. Nursing is one of the challenges. Physicians is another challenge. But more importantly, which we don't always talk about, is all the allied health professions.
That's what I want to get at.
And so, you know, I remember there was a report that CHA had worked on a couple of years ago, and one of the hardest areas to find was like a clinical lab scientist, for example. And those are tremendous shortages. They're hard individuals to find. Their average age at the time was 55, 56 years old.
We have a clinical ad scientist training program, and Sharp is our partner in that, as a matter of fact, and we're looking to grow that because of the very shortage you mentioned. Mm-hmm.
And those are tremendous opportunities. That's where, you know, the community colleges also can help in that, and that a lot of those allied health professions can be trained at the community college level.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing more partnerships with our community colleges.
Yeah.
I know there's a workforce forum that's coming up, a town hall, in mid-March, I believe, March 18th, locally down here in San Diego, where they're going to bring together a lot of individuals, and it's not just healthcare focused, but it's on looking at our workforce and where do we need to be positioned.
Is that a workforce partnership sponsored event?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. If I remember correctly, I can get you those details. But you know, those are opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our community colleges are a tremendous partner when it comes to helping these shortages. And then mm-hmm. it goes even further as you're looking at your workforce. It's making sure that going down into the high school and even middle school levels and making sure they're getting the training they need
right.
to position themselves to be successful. So yeah. workforce is a growing challenge. And part of it is with all the shifts in healthcare, we have titles now that didn't exist previously. So it's a matter of finding individuals who can fill those positions.
Mm-hmm.
Take patient experience. That isn't something that we'd always talked about. It might have been filled in a variety of manners. But now you have individuals who are like a chief patient experience officer, who that is their key area of focus,
mm-hmm.
ensuring that you have patient satisfaction, et cetera. So not only do we have challenges with our current workforce, but I think one of the other challenges is what are the positions that don't exist today that we're going to need moving forward, and how do we train those individuals?
That's a conversation I would love to engage in, because we would love to be there to provide, you know, the whatever kind of education that they need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a case management program and that helps nurses and social workers become case managers. And I was speaking to some case managers who said, oh, no, we don't call it that anymore. It's now care transition coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked to somebody else, and they said, no, we're patient navigators. So even if the job description were the same, it's called something different. And, you know, in various institutions, and people need to know how to look for that and know what kind of skills and knowledge they need to have to be effective in those really good mm-hmm. jobs.
And even with those title changes, my guess is you also have some skills that have also changed in the process.
Mm.
You know, take a patient navigator. Yeah, it might have been basic case management previously, but it's a matter of understanding what are the resources, connecting them to those resources, and directing them in a fashion where they're getting what they need out of our healthcare system. So there are some tremendous challenges when it comes to workforce.
I believe you. I think that's definitely food for ongoing conversation. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to give our listeners a chance. I've been talking too much here. And we do have a question from one of our listeners that says, how do you think American hospitals can compete with the lower cost of overseas hospitals? You know, you think about the medical tourism. Is that still a big factor anymore, or do people still?
Medical tourism is a big factor. I mean, truthfully, you know, cost is something as hospitals that we have to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is something also relatively speaking, it's a huge challenge, because a lot of our systems are based on charge masters, et cetera, without getting into the weeds, which
right.
create a lot of challenges. So, you know, the medical tourism industry does continue to thrive. People go overseas, go to other countries. But one of the things I would caution is, I know our quality here is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say it's not in other places, but we're very much standard driven. You have a lot of accrediting bodies who ensure that
peer review.
Yeah, that you're doing all the right things and providing the right care.
Mm-hmm. I believe it. One of the things I wanted to just touch on briefly, too, is that the Hospital Association is obviously a trade association mm-hmm. of San Diego and Imperial County Hospitals. Tell us a little bit about how it operates, you know, governance and members and that kind of thing.
So our regional association is one of three regional associations throughout the state. We're sort of created in a federated model whereby we're a partnership with the California Hospital Association. And the reason that becomes important is that our members not only get representation at the local level
mm-hmm.
and advocacy at the local level, but also at the state and federal levels. So, you know, we're a resource for our 35 hospitals and health systems down here in San Diego and Imperial.
35, wow. You know, people probably wouldn't believe we had that many.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. And then when you look at statewide, there's about 400. So, you know, there's a lot of needs. And the one place where I think the association really thrives is we become that sort of big tent where, even though all our hospitals are competitive, it provides an environment where we can all come together and gain consensus and agree on what we should be advocating for and directions that we need to be moving in. So it's definitely a unique environment.
Yeah, very interesting, very competitive, and yet very collaborative. Mm-hmm. I find that really interesting. And so your board is who?
Our board is comprised of our hospitals. So we have a board which is representative of our members, mm-hmm. and we meet every other month, essentially. And, you know, we discuss all sorts of policy questions and things that would impact the industry down here. So mm-hmm. it allows an opportunity, again, to share thoughts in an environment where we can continue to learn and continue to exchange ideas.
And you do a needs assessment. Mm-hmm. And what do you, and periodically, and tell us about that. I know we don't have too much time, but tell us about the needs assessment, what you find and what you're doing with that information.
Yeah, so community benefit is essentially what we're talking about. That is a huge area. And in fact, you know, we didn't touch on that, but in terms of challenges for nonprofit hospitals, that's a growing area because there's a lot of scrutiny, whether fair or unfair, in that area.
So what do we mean by community benefits?
So what that would be, and I guess it depends on the definition you're looking at, but in the traditional sense, people always want to talk about community benefit relative to charity care, but it's more than that.
Okay.
It's not only the free care that's provided, but it's all the services that our hospitals provide, either through grants or through services they operate that benefit our communities. So whether it's, you know, a free clinic or it's, you know, services provided in our community or partnering with community-based organizations, there's a lot of care and good that's provided through those programs. So when it comes to community benefit or needs assessments, what that is gathering information to understand what our community actually needs, what are the services, where are the gaps, and through the process, where can we help in those areas. So obviously, if you look at historically, typically, when it comes to needs assessments, a lot of it typically will focus on diabetes, cardiovascular,
obesity.
So, you know, that's traditionally been a lot of the focus. But moving forward, you know, there are challenges to look at other areas. So that's where our needs assessment provides a unique opportunity. And again, it sort of gives you that big tent mentality where everybody can come together and rather than in a siloed approach work on their needs assessment individually, you can come together and share ideas. You still have to do your own report, obviously, but it
but
provides for a lot of,
provide.
Yeah, it's a lot of collaboration.
I should let listeners know that that is available, that anybody can download the needs assessment report, and there's an executive summary, and you can see the way the data is sliced and diced.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an enormous resource for anybody working in healthcare in San Diego, and I think it's great, probably not that you're mandated to do it, but that you do it and you do it well.
Yeah, as an association, we don't have to do it. Individual hospitals being nonprofits obviously do, but you're right. It is a tremendous value, and it doesn't happen everywhere, so that is definitely a unique, and that's something you give kudos to San Diego for because they've taken the initiative to do that.
And I think the whole idea of rallying around some of the issues that are highlighted there and having your members say, okay, this is what we're going to do about it based on what we've learned. It's, data-based initiatives that stem from that, I think, is really a real plus for San Diego. So what else should we know as patients about what's going on?
Oh, that's such an open-ended question. I mean, you know,
well, luckily you only have 2 minutes.
Oh, wow. Only 2 minutes to answer that question. You know, what should we know? You know, it's a matter of being educated, understanding all the changes that are coming, being able to link up to the services you need, you know, being more of a consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that environment has changed. And a lot of that's changed based on information is readily available. When
that's
you can
a
go on
point.
The internet, you can look at all sorts of things that maybe historically you wouldn't have been able to find. So there's an opportunity to educate yourself in terms of the changes and where we're headed.
And be more involved, I think, I think is what you're saying, in your own healthcare.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, because again, you know, part of what we're doing is we're asking all sorts of things of hospitals. We want hospitals to work on reducing readmissions. But there's an opportunity for patients because they have a role in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing mandating patients to make sure they take their meds. But, you know, if you want to stay healthy, there are certain things you should be doing outside the hospital walls to ensure that you stay healthy.
Absolutely. I think we are looking at part of all of this is lifestyle changes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, part of everybody's working together to obviate the need for so much acute care, if possible. I mean, I know that's difficult with the baby boomers aging and the comorbidities and all of that. But I do think there is a role for patients, and I think that's exciting. And, you know, Sharp and Scripps and your members are certainly doing an amazing job when it comes to patient portals, giving people access to their own health records. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you're doing in that area?
Well, you know, obviously we have an HIE, which is growing.
Health Information Exchange.
Yes. And that's an opportunity moving forward to share more information, not only for patients to access information, but it's an opportunity among providers. Because even though you may routinely go to a certain provider for care, if you end up in a hospital emergency department, through exchanges growing, you'd be able to, a provider would be able to pull up your record, see when you were last seen, what was done, and that just allows an opportunity to have even better care.
Absolutely.
It sort of fills in the blanks that they may not have had otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, and I'm glad you brought that up. Well, we unfortunately are out of time, and I am so sorry because it has been wonderful, and I really appreciate your coming. This has been, as I say, our last opportunity for the live show, but please, listeners, join us again on podcast next month. Next month, we'll have Dr. Wilma Wooten, who is the public health officer for the County of San Diego, quite the dynamo. Looking forward to that. I know we all have questions about measles and Ebola and that kind of thing, so that's what we'll be talking about, I'm sure. So thank you again. I am delighted that our hospitals are in good hands. And remember, listeners, you can listen to the show again at onlinex.ucsd.edu/interactive radio. And we'll be moving to www.ucsd.tv. You just need to put in the search box the Pulse. So stay with us, keep the conversation going, and for now, here's to your health.